Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner, and I'm here with Dr. Adil Shamu, Associate Fellow at the Institute for Policy Studies, Senior Analyst for Foreign Policy and Focus, author of Equal Worth, When Humanity Will Have Peace. He blogs for waroorpeace.com, at forwarpeace.com. And Zainab Chowdhury joins us once again as well, the Maryland Outreach Manager for the Council on American Islamic Relations. Zainab and Adil, welcome. Good to have you both with us.
Thank you for having us.
And well, please join us at 410-319-8888. Write to us here at talk@steinershow.org. Tweet us at Mark Steiner. Jump onto our Facebook pages. Your thoughts at 410-319-8888 on this kind of anti-Islamic violence that is really on the uptick in our country. And we just heard from Amy Goodman that were hundreds and maybe thousands of apartments and homes of French Muslims and their businesses have been raided. People are on forced lockdown. We saw here in the United States, in Pittsburgh just the other day, where a young Moroccan man was shot in the back in his cab by a passenger who got out of his car, said, "Let me get my money," came back, shot through the back window as he tried to flee, and shot him between the shoulder blades. Other violence taking place at Trump rallies and in, around this country. So join us for your ideas at 410-319-8888. Because, you know, this is becoming very serious, I think, in ways some of us did expect. But the depth, I think, of Islamophobia in this country is much deeper than we want to admit.
Mark, thank you so much for having me on today. You're absolutely right. We are witnessing an unprecedented level of Islamophobia here in the United States and all across Europe and the Western world. And I think that many people maybe tend to underestimate the impact of this rhetoric from, for example, politicians and elected officials that's contributing to this climate of animosity and fear-mongering towards Muslims. And it's manifesting in the form of hate crimes, of bias attacks, of threats against houses of worship, and just really an overall sense of alienation towards the Muslim community. Over the course of the last few weeks, my organization, the Council on American Islamic Relations, we've been inundated with calls of hate crimes and bias attacks and threats reported by Muslims across the country. And it's just really a frightening climate that we're experiencing right now.
Adil, one of the things I was thinking was that, you know, that it's we call it Islamophobia, and that's a huge piece of what's going on here. But you, as an Arab American, are a Christian Arab American.
Yes, like me.
Right?
I'm Christian.
Right? That's what I'm saying. And Zainab is
Muslim.
A Muslim woman, but not an Arab woman.
That's correct.
Right? So America has this all confused.
Yes.
In many ways.
Yes. As a matter of fact, people know me for 10, 20 years. They assume that I'm a Muslim, even though I think I've told them once before, if I was a Muslim, I'll be very proud to be a Muslim. But nevertheless, it's really because the overwhelming majority of these areas are Muslim. However, in the old days, I come from Iraq, 1.5 million Christians. However, now there is less than 500,000 after the liberation of Iraq by the United States. I think the whole issue comes up in a political sense. When a country is very allies to the United States, if you remember during the Shah, there was no Islamophobia against Iranians, for example.
Right.
There was no... during Mubarak about Muslims in Egypt, not as much at all. So if you are an ally, if you're a Jordanian, they think the world of them, you know, because there is the political alliances. However, nowadays, unfortunately, the issue have become the political leadership is making sure the American people sort of go into the worst instincts, you know, fear from people who look differently. This has happened before in our history. You know, against Irish, against Italians, and there was also... But we're talking about 2015. We are a very civilized country. We're a highly educated country. And especially the Republican political leadership. You know, he is inflaming the feeling anti-Islam.
Trump,
Donald Trump. And it's scary. The demagoguery really works, unfortunately. We have many historical events to prove that. So it's tough. It's very tough. I agree with Zainab.
So the question, there's a couple of things. I want to talk about the political issues and also the American issue here. We have seen when Donald Trump puts out there that and gives credence to the mythology, it makes it real, that hundreds of Muslims in in New Jersey stood up and applauded and cheered and had rallies when the attacks on 9/11 happened. I mean, but this becomes the mythology, Zainab, that people that some people in our country really take in. Believe becomes part of their persona and the reason that they're so angry.
It's chilling. And this despite the fact that from numerous sources, those claims have been debunked, numerous legitimate sources who have stepped up and debunked these claims that, in fact, there were not thousands, not even hundreds of Muslims that were cheering on 9/11. My own husband, he was in one of the Twin Towers, and when the first plane struck and the horrific nightmare that he endured and just helping people exit and trying to find his own way to safety and being one of the, you know, first responders who wasn't visibly publicly recognized, but who was there on the front lines trying to help pull people to safety. I mean, to us, it strikes close to home because it undermines the contributions that Muslims make to help improve society. Not only that, but it's an insult to hear a politician make a claim like this, an egregious claim like that, and then to double down and to continue to make this claim despite the fact that there have been reports that there were absolutely, you know, that this is an absolutely false claim. And unfortunately, there are people who are listening to this rhetoric, and it's inflaming tensions and it's creating more hysteria and fear towards Muslims, and that's contributing to some of the anti-Muslim sentiment that we're witnessing now.
And part of the problem, I think, is that, and I want to see what listeners think at 410-319-8888, is that America's in the middle of a political war with itself over who we are as a people, where we're going, that people who are Muslim are seen as the other, not really Americans. Yep. You hear it over and over again. Not acknowledging the fact that there has been a Muslim presence in this country since the country began, and that maybe one quarter to one third of all the enslaved Africans who came to this country were of the Islamic faith when they were enslaved in this country, just as a historical fact to put that out there. But I think that part of it is there is politically and religiously, and sometimes they're intertwined, a deep-seated hatred of people who are Muslim that comes primarily, not completely, out of certain parts of the Christian faith and being fueled by kind of a very conservative ideology. I think there's a really interesting and dangerous confluence that we don't often want to talk about publicly because it makes you sound as if you're against people who are evangelicals. Of course, that's not the issue. The issue is there's a dangerous intersection here, it seems to me.
Well, and also the political leadership then take that and stoke it further, such that the House of Representatives passed legislation we won't take refugees who are Muslims. I mean, this is crazy. No refugees from Iraq or Syria. This has never happened in our history. And 51 Democrats actually join them. This is what hysteria and demagoguery does, and it requires strong leadership. And I have to give a lot of credit to some of the leaders, like John McCain, of course, President Obama, who stood firm against such stoking of the fears. But the Republican is just rampant. This party, I have lived in this country for 51 years. I have never seen Republican Party this right wing, really, in all 51 years I have been living here. It's scary how the Republican leadership, and they don't provide leadership. I mean, Ted Cruz stokes it. Paul Ryan, by actually leading the House of Representatives into such a resolution against refugees from Syria and Iraq, and the 51 Democrats, and there is no one who's standing up against them, even though they say something, but they keep quiet afterwards. So that's what requires leadership towards what you just said, that old historical Christian Muslim differences, which came in bigotry at times, to flourish further.
Zainab?
What a lot of people don't realize is that this divisive rhetoric that, you know, creates like an us versus them dichotomy between the West Americans, non-Muslims, and Muslims, this is exactly what terrorist organizations like ISIS wants, because it helps them boost their ranks, it helps them convince people to support them, and it creates like a divide between Muslims and non-Muslims. And we saw this debate about the Syrian refugee resettlement debate that just took on a lot of steam, like after the Paris attacks, and which Muslims all across the world have spoken out to condemn strongly, even though we don't see other faith groups being expected to condemn attacks when terrorists of their faith who share their faith happen to commit these or perpetrate these attacks. None of the perpetrators in the Paris attacks were Syrian refugees. We know that there was one who there was a Syrian passport that was found near the body of one of the attackers that was later discovered to be a fake passport.
Right.
But then this has resulted in a tremendous backlash, not just in the United States, but in Canada and other parts of the world, where now there's this fear and there's this hesitance to allow Syrian refugees who are persecuted, who are trying to flee the same terrorist organizations that the world's working to delegitimize and to stamp out. It puts them in a predicament where they're no longer welcome here as well. And it's just a catch-22, is a conundrum that we're actually, when we engage in this kind of dialogue, when we have these kind of discussions, like we're helping terrorist organizations because that's what they want. They want to be able to tap into those vulnerable populations of Muslims who don't have anywhere to go, who are marginalized or being persecuted, and to convince them to join their ranks. Unfortunately, we have elected officials here and politicians who are running for office, like Mr. Trump and like Dr. Carson, who are talking about special IDs for Muslims and having a database for Muslim Syrian refugees. And it's just contributing more to this climate of fear and hostility.
We had a very short break and come right back with our guests. Please join us here at 410-319-8888 with your thoughts and your ideas, your own experiences, what you've experienced. There are many people who listen to this program I know who are of the Islamic faith. I want to hear your thoughts on what we're talking about. 410-319-8888. We'll be right back with our guests as we continue this exploration. Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner here with Dr. Otto Shamu, Associate Fellow at the Institute for Policy Studies, Senior Analyst of Foreign Policy and Focus, author of the book Equal Worth, When Humanity Will Have Peace, who blogs at forwarorpeace.com, and Zainab Chowdhury, who is a Maryland Outreach Manager for the Council on American-Islamic Relations, and you at 410-319-8888. Write to us here at talkatsteinershow.org. During the break, Adela and I were talking just about where we are in America, and that one of the things is that I think that, you know, there was a video I watched last week that came from Northern Virginia when a Muslim man was talking about building a new mosque representing his community. I forget his name. A man stood up there and started screaming at them, "All Muslims are terrorists. You're a terrorist," and pointing his finger at this man. You know, "We don't want you here. We know what you're really about." But the scary thing was the number of people in the audience who were applauding when he said that. And I think that part of the question is how to, in a social and cultural sense, as well as a political sense, but I mean a social and cultural sense, to get beyond this, the lack of understanding of what Islam is, the lack of understanding who the diversity of the Islamic community. We do not get it here.
Yeah, and I think not only the most overwhelming majority, I would even say 98, 99% of Muslims and Arabs in this country support and are patriotic and support their government in most of their action towards ISIS. They do not support ISIS in any shape or form. The religion doesn't support ISIS in any shape and form. But this what you called it, low level of this bigotry and discrimination towards Muslims and Arabs in general, what the political leadership doesn't take it and destroy it, but sort of want to build on it, build their political career on that kind of discrimination. And that's a perfect fodder for ISIS recruitment, which we're trying to reduce. As a matter of fact, the Muslims and Arabs in the United States are so much better in terms of loyalty to their nation than the Europeans are. The Europeans have a much bigger problem than we do. We don't have anything comparable to Europeans. And that we should not sort of take it for granted, nor cause trouble for them. It's in our national interest. There are 1.7 billion Muslims around the world, and you don't want that to become a recruiting ground for ISIS and the like. And they are very clever in recruitment.
Zainab?
You know, I think this goes back to the values of religious freedom and democracy that are such a core component of our country. And historically, we've seen, even though there have been persecuted groups over the past several decades, we've seen Irish Americans, Japanese Americans, African Americans, of course, historically have been persecuted and marginalized in many ways. Each community has overcome, to a large degree, the challenges that they've been faced with, and they've been able to emerge stronger and better for it. And as a whole, we as a country, we are strengthened by our diversity. We are strengthened by the various ethnicities and religions that contribute to our society. And unfortunately, now that we're seeing Muslims in the United States who are being marginalized and who are under attack, it's really incumbent upon all Americans who value those principles of religious freedom and democracy to step up and take it upon themselves to reject bigotry and hatred where we see it. It's the Muslim community can vocalize our rejection of the kind of hate speech and the intolerance that we're seeing from elected officials, but we need our Christian and Jewish and atheist and Buddhist and Hindu and Sikh friends and neighbors to also stand up and vocalize with us this firm rejection that we will not allow divisive rhetoric and bigotry and fear-mongering and hatred to divide us as a country. Unfortunately, when we allow this kind of rhetoric to divide us, that's when we become the weakest. That's when we become divided.
I haven't read, for example, about our political leadership in Maryland. Where are the two senators? I mean, they may have made nice comments, but didn't carry out in the media at all. Where are our state legislators, state government, the Democrats, Tea Party in Maryland, for example? This is supposed to be a progressive state. And they all need to be talking, because those leadership cultivate and raise those children of tomorrow. They are now teenagers and college kids. If they don't hear pushback on this kind of lying and spinning from the political leadership of the right wing, it will prepare. It will gain more momentum and more currency.
That we especially see that post 9/11, when President Bush at that time, when he visited a mosque and when he clearly stated that America is not at war with Islam, and that Muslims are not our enemy,
right.
are the terrorists. That reaction, that critical reaction that he had, like, it's credited to helping stamp down and kind of, like, you know, allay some of the bigotry and the fear-mongering that could have taken place towards Muslims and towards Muslim communities across the country. But now that we're seeing this kind of, you know, hate speech and divisive fear-mongering from politicians who, especially in the GOP, who are running for public office or for president, we don't see that kind of same level of pushback from our elected officials on the state level or the federal level. There have been officials who've spoken out and condemned, for example, I think Governor Chris Christie in New Jersey, he did debunk Mr. Trump's claim
right,
that thousands
right.
of Muslims were cheering. But it's not to the same level as we're hearing, especially in the media, the kind of rhetoric that Mr. Trump is putting out there and Dr. Carson's putting out there.
Let me get another call in here. If I get a call in here before we have to break for another conversation, 410-319-8888 is the number here. And Jim, on line one, you're on the air. Welcome.
Yeah. Hi, Mark. I apologize for the audio. It's a rainy day in the car.
Be careful.
Just curious about any parallels that your panelists might have. You know, since you mentioned post 9/11 society, and you know, we did this with Japanese Americans. In World War II, and I don't know whether history is instructive or punitive or what, but I'm just curious about what insights they might have.
Huh. Interesting question.
We know that there has been talk of internment camps, for example, from some politicians and elected officials for Muslims, and just frightening, chilling talk that so far has not gained much traction, but the kind of trajectory that we see that our country headed in with the kind of rhetoric that's being propagated by Mr. Trump and Dr. Carson and those who are following their lead and contributing to the hate crimes and racist attacks against Muslims. The fear is that might be, if we don't step up and challenge this kind of, you know, hate speech and racism and religious profiling, that's the direction that our country would be headed in. And we know from history that was just a horrible mistake. I mean, in World War II, when we had German Jews who were trying to enter the United States, refugees who were trying to enter the United States, and their boats were turned away because of the same kind of fear-mongering that we're now seeing towards Syrian refugees, that resulted in thousands, if not millions, of German Jews who were not able to seek safe haven, who either perished or they had to, you know, find some other safe haven. Our country has a legacy of this kind of divisive, frightening response to fear mongering. And if we can learn from that, then we won't, and then history won't repeat itself. But it's incumbent upon our elected officials, especially, to speak out against the kind of divisive fear-mongering that we're hearing from candidates like, especially Mr. Trump and Dr. Carson.
Well, you know, fear-mongering, demagoguery, and people like Trump, demagogues, facts doesn't stop them. 80% of all refugees are women and children. How about just accept women and children? You see what I'm saying? It's just facts doesn't bother them. As if 100% are, you know, people around 20 to 30 years old who are more apt to join these kind of organizations.
Do we have time for one more caller before we take a break? Yes, let's get this one caller in, then I have a final question for Zainab. 410-319-8888. Robert, you're on the air. Welcome.
Hello.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I'm been catching up on my reading. I'm looking last night at a October 12th New Yorker article wherein it was pointed out, and I remember this from history, but, you know, there's so much to do, I've forgotten. But the Chinese Exclusion Act was passed in 1882 by our Congress.
Right.
Remained in full force until 1943. So it's not the first time that xenophobia has raised its lovely head and become a policy. And then a personal comment in that every time I'm a white American from the Midwest. I've been in Baltimore for 32 years. But every time I run into any of the other ethnic people that are new to me, I learn something. I come away grazed. And specifically, I've been a carpenter most of my life. The Mexican people that I met when I was still back home taught me skills that basically have saved my back, been more
right.
useful in streamlining work. I've had some, since I've been in Baltimore, I had a brief relationship with a friend of mine who was part of the Sikh community, and they taught me some peacefulness. which I didn't have coming out of a
reasonably
striving Midwestern background. So I think this xenophobia thing is I think it's part of the human experience, and it's a larger question is how do we get past that?
So I'm glad you raised the issues you raised. I appreciate the call, Robert. So let's close out on this comment just about the xenophobia that does exist and the dangers to think it can't happen here again when it can happen here again, and what we cannot let it happen here again. So let me start with you, Zainab, and very quickly, and then we'll close out here with Adil. I mean, when it comes to things, you know, a group like the Council on American Islamic Relations, I mean, what are the steps that you're talking about that we need to take to address the issues that Robert was raising?
I think a large part of MARC is just reaching out to Americans who, for example, don't have that personal interaction with individuals from diverse religions and diverse ethnicities. You know, it's interesting because some of the people who are the most opposed to or the most xenophobic or who exhibit xenophobic tendencies are also the people who drive Japanese cars and love Mexican food and wear Italian leather shoes. And, you know, like they have so many different aspects of their lives that are just, you know, enhanced because of the contributions of these different ethnic communities. And I think that sometimes when it's easier to otherize people when we don't have that interpersonal contact, when we don't sit down and have a conversation face to face and talk about issues that might otherwise, you know, contribute to like a climate of, you know, fear or hostility or what have you. So I think part of it's just having that, you know, face to face dialogue and not just going by what we read, for example, or see on Fox News or like other, you know, biased, right, you know, sources that perpetuate this ideology that, you know, America, that many of these ethnic communities' values are not compatible with America, because America in some respects it's not a melting pot. I wouldn't say. I would say it's more of a salad bowl.
We're still a salad bowl.
And we're richer for it.
No question. A very quick thought, Otto, because we do have
President Obama this morning, really in his news coverage, gave a very profound wisdom. He said, we all the time overreact to fear. And that's not true. He said, here is Paris. Nearly 200 world leaders met here, discussed, and Paris is beautiful. The restaurants are open. The bars are open. The political leadership is working. People going to their work. The art museum are open. And he said, people are enjoying it. Paris didn't disappear because there was, you know, 20, 30, 40, 50 who've been killed by a handful of murderers. And we shouldn't let few people scare us into start dividing and hating all our neighbors and the one who looked differently because of few people. We didn't hate all Christians from Tim McVeigh did the Oklahoma bombing. Nobody even mentioned the fact he was Christian.
I want to thank both of you. This has been a great conversation, and it's always great having both of you in this program for a number of reasons. You heard Dr. Adil Shamu, Associate Fellow at the Institute for Policy Studies, Senior Analyst for Foreign Policy and Focus, author of Equal Worth, When Humanity Will Have Peace. He blogs at forwarorpeace.com, and Zainab Chowdhury joins us once again as well, Maryland Outreach Manager for the Council on American Islamic Relations. Zainab and Adil, thank you both so much.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
We're going to take a very brief break and get an update from Doug Colbert on what's happening in the trial of Officer Porter. Stay with us.